Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your glorious dear leader, Chris Spangle. I am your host. Smiling like he's done something wrong, across the Cheshire Cat of the We Are Libertarians crew is Greg Lenz.
Christopher, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. What are you doing?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just ready to be triggered.
Well, you're doing a darn good job. To a returning champ of We Are Libertarians, Aaron Ewert.
Chris, how are you, buddy?
Champion of We Are Libertarians because he gave a lot of money in cash.
That wasn't a lot.
It was. You and I are in different tax brackets, bruh. That was a lot.
Was that a tax-free donation?
Yes. That's cash. Why I'm not saying how much it was.
Straight cash, homie.
Yeah, so thank you very much for donating to We Are Libertarians. Joining us as our guest for this episode, our special guest, is Tony Styles.
How's it going, brother?
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, hanging in there. Another day, I'm just struggling to stay alive, but somehow I'm much better at being relevant than I am alive, I guess.
I have the opposite problem.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm struggling to be alive and I'm struggling to be relevant, so it's a struggle all around for little old me. So several years ago, I started seeing this guy, who's the one dude who was spamming everybody's pages?
M. Brent Pittman?
Yeah, not that guy, the other one that was running for president.
Austin Peterson?
No.
The guy that just showed up at the convention?
Shannon.
No,
oh,
you guys. Derek
Gary
Michael
Johnson?
Reed.
Derek Michael Reed. Oh, so, yeah, the anarcho-green capitalist.
Yeah, that guy's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like in person?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but sort of in the vein, but not in like a crazy annoying way or anything like that. I just started seeing like 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, Tony Styles posting to every libertarian page, hey, if you need a speaker, let me know. And I was like, all right, this dude's going somewhere. He's got chutzpah. He's putting some effort into it. I took my sabbatical from Liberty after my divorce, and I come back, and like Tony Styles is a celebritarian. So what happened in the meantime? How did you go from, you know, dude writing on Facebook pages to celebritarian
who's
speaking all over the country?
I just put in the work, I guess. What it comes down to is I had a radio show in Omaha, a local radio show in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a little bit, but it was only about 9 months before they asked me to go syndicated, and we went nationwide after that point. But it came from a lot of, I don't know how to explain it. You'll probably understand this. If you invest your money in the right things, you go places. For me, I had the radio show, and I was recording at the radio studio, so I didn't need the equipment.
Right, right.
So I invested in the agents, the managers, the people that can be the big megaphone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's how it all happened.
That's great. Yeah. So how did you? Where from? Whence do you hail? To use the Queen's English.
Yeah, I hail from Omaha, Nebraska. I'm a Cornhusker.
Okay. Yep. All right. Born and raised.
Born and raised.
When did you realize that you were a libertarian?
Probably in high school. There was a certain point in high school. What happened was I got kicked out of high school, and it was because the administration came up with an 8-day rule. They said if you miss more than 8 days, we're going to take half your credits.
Okay.
In my second semester of my senior year, no, first semester of my senior year, I had missed 12 days, and they called me in. They called my parents in. We sat there, and we went through this whole thing, long and drawn out. And I said, okay, well, what can I do to get the credits back? Because otherwise, I'm just going to drop out, get a GED, and I'll go off and go to college
mm-hmm.
right away.
Right.
Which sounded like a great idea because I was tired of high school. I was burnt out anyways. And I forget his name. Doesn't matter. He was the superintendent of the school system in Elkhorn, Nebraska. And he said, well, what we want you to do is come in on Saturdays until the end of the year, and that'll make up for the time. And I said, well, what would I be doing on these Saturdays? And they said, well, just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents got this look on their face like, oh, shit. And they knew exactly where my head was going. I said, yeah, that doesn't sound right to me. I'll just leave. I'll see you guys later. And I think that's when I realized there was something wrong with just the way the government thought. Why would I need to sit in a chair to make up for time? I'm passing my classes.
Right.
They can go screw themselves. I'm done.
Yeah.
But you're not doing it the way they said to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
How dare you, Tony?
I know.
You're undermining the state, and uh-huh. you're probably a terrorist.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I did. And from that point, I knew that I was different, But I didn't know where all the other different people were quite yet, and it took me until about 2008, 2009 to identify there was a group of people that are just as crazy as I am.
Yeah.
Or just as sane as I am. It seems crazy.
It's about the same time frame, and it's almost, it's kind of the same story, because I was in Mr. Benj's class. You know,
World
Mr.
History?
Yeah, World History with Mr. Benj. And he stood up there one day, and he said, you know, you all realize that political power is a complete myth, right? And I just looked at him, and I go, why? And he goes, because there's 20 of you, and there's one of me, and if you want to leave, you all can get up and leave. You can all run over me if you want and walk out the door and never come back. There may be consequences, but really, as long as you make it on your own, who cares what those consequences are? My authority over you is completely psychological and has absolutely nothing to do with force. You just all believe that you're, you know, good little boys and girls. So you're not, you're just going to do what you're told. And I went, oh, wow, that's how that works or doesn't work. And that's kind of, I mean, it was a government school.
I sat there and asked him if he was going to be on the test.
Right. I wasn't that kid. And so that's when I kind of became aware that, oh, wow, okay. And then, yeah, became a Republican for a while, you know, held a support the troops rally in 2003, and then became disillusioned working in the Republican Party. And then now here we are, Ron Paul, 2008. Yep. So were you influenced by Ron Paul at all?
Yeah, that's a terrible question to ask me. I had no idea who he was until it was too late. Yeah, in 2008.
It already happened.
I missed the bus somehow. I don't know what took place. I was busy. I had things to do, and I wasn't paying attention, I guess.
I had a paper route.
Yeah, there were things that I had to accomplish.
Yeah.
And going back to the story earlier, my guidance counselor told me that I should learn how to weld. Yeah. That was what they told me. I said, learn how to weld. Learn a trade like that. And you'll survive in life, is what he told me. And I saw him about a year and a half ago, and I got to slap down my business card in front of him and told him to go fuck himself.
So,
all right. Yeah.
So what do you do now?
I'm starting an organization, starting a foundation that helps fight against human traffickers is what I'm doing right now. In the past, you know, you saw me working with Austin. I did the radio show. I have a new show coming up in September that I can't really talk a whole lot about for contract reasons, but everything's been pretty good and life has been good to me.
Good.
I really hope that I can give it all back the proper way with this charity that we're starting.
And we'll talk a little bit about that coming up. So you ended up on a radio show. How did you end up getting on the radio?
I was at the radio station. And they had a new station manager, and he came down. I was helping out with a radiothon for St. Jude's, and I had told them I was a local entrepreneur, and I told them that if we raised $100,000 for St. Jude's, that I would shave a mohawk into my hair, you know, get the mohawk.
And, okay,
I like the mohawk.
Yeah, the mohawk was really cool. I really did enjoy the mohawk. I'll talk about that as we get into this.
Aaron's off camera, and for those listening on podcast, he has the Hitler Youth. He looks like
I got to get freshened up tomorrow. It's
yeah, starting to grow out. It's starting to grow out. It's getting a little too
East boy, F yeah. boy fade.
It's getting a little ethnic.
A little too long.
Hill people.
Yeah, but. Where was I at in that?
The mohawk.
What happened was I told people if we raise $100,000 for St. Jude's over this radiothon, I'd get a mohawk. And it took them pretty much no time. They had it done one day. And the new guy that was running the station said, we have a spot on Saturdays. You have a good voice. Would you like to come in? Do you have any political opinions? And I said, you probably won't like my opinions. And he said, well, we want to hear them. Just get on there and we'll do a little test and we'll see what you do. See if you can think on the fly and talk. And I said, okay, well, I'll do that.
That sounds exactly like how Greg and I met.
Yeah.
He showed up. He's like, you're not going to like my opinions. And I was like, it doesn't matter. You have a good voice.
Yeah. No, really. A bad voice can scare everybody away from your opinions. It's true.
Yeah.
If you can have terrible opinions and a good voice, Rush Limbaugh. I mean, there you go. It's a perfect example.
Well, Tony's off the show.
Oh,
totally kidding.
Or you can have a bad voice in a podcast, like me.
That's why you have memes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I ended up getting a mohawk and made the news. They showed up with camera equipment to film me getting a mohawk out in Omaha. That's how slow of a news day it was
right.
that day. And in the video, you can see the lady that does my hair. She leans over and she's telling me, she says, you sure you want to do this? And I go, yeah. And she goes, this is like a year-long commitment to not getting laid. I didn't think, and then the budget.
But as a libertarian, you'd already accepted that fate.
Well, that's part of you accept a vow of chastity.
Right? Yeah.
I'm a libertarian. Oh, I'm dry.
Grandma's crusty muffin.
Yep. So you were on radio, and so how did you decide that you wanted to be a part of the libertarian movement? Like, how did you kind of jump into the libertarian movement to get to where you're at now? Like,
selfishly.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest about it. It was completely selfish. What happened was I knew that I was a libertarian. I had the radio show and I saw it and I'm like, okay, well, there's money to be made in this. Let's start pimping my voice out, and we'll go out there and we'll do some speeches and collect some money. And that's what I did. It sounds absolutely terrible. I don't regret a single second of it. And it was a good business move. But
did it work?
Oh yeah, it worked.
Okay. If anyone would like to book me to speak at their convention, I'm.
Yeah.
I don't have a good voice, but I have something. I have pizzazz.
Yeah. If you can put on a show, I mean, come on, you gotta be able to put on a show. If you can put on a show, if you can speak in front of people, you're gonna do fine. But you have to give some free ones away. It's like drugs.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
Build your client base of freebies.
Giving a lot, yeah, exactly giving a lot of free ones away. Okay, so you spent how many years kind of traveling the libertarian circuit?
4 years now.
Okay, yep. And so kind of what has it been like? What kind of groups have you spoken at?
A lot of conventions. I've probably spoken at 30-plus conventions, different states. I've spoken at different rallies. I don't know, just a bunch of different ones. The most liberty thing that I've ever seen was the Libertarians Free the Nipple. That was pretty cool. That was different to see.
I've been promoting that on my Snapchat. I like to snap shirtless. Yeah. My fans don't like it, but I've been trying to free the nipple.
I think we had a special chat group called Free the Nipple.
Free the Nipple. Yeah, it's acceptable for women to be topless now. Why not fat men? Okay, it's my turn. Greg, take your shirt off.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've spoken at a lot of different groups. Assess the libertarian. Has it all been kind of Libertarian Party conventions, or is it
a lot of Libertarian Party conventions? But there's also different things that people set up. I guess there's all different kinds of things people do.
It kind of assess the growth of the libertarian movement, or the lack of growth in the libertarian movement over the
last
4 years.
It's exploded the past year, but up until this year, I haven't really seen a whole lot of movement. It's been stagnant, if not falling backwards.
Yeah,
a lot of people just jumping ship, and it's, you know, every 4 years we do gain a lot of people because people are tired of their political party and they start to see that they don't like what's going on, but. We always fail them. They keep on thinking we're going to show them liberty, and then we go out and we nominate Republicans or Democrats to be the people that lead the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that was shade, Greg.
I have a feeling that you aren't a big... you're not feeling the Johnson, if you will.
No, I don't feel Gary Johnson's penis.
Oh, do you support him politically?
I support Gary Johnson more than I would support other people.
Not as much as Austin Peterson.
I like Austin better. I think he'd be a better torchbearer. I think he would be the one that would... I mean, the guy is a jackass, and I love him for it. He's one of my best friends. I love Austin. I really do. And him as president just tickles me. I think it'd be hilarious.
He's an asshole, but he's our asshole.
Yeah, he's my asshole. That's exactly right.
That's the same relationship Greg and I have. It's like, yeah, he's an asshole. I mean, and he says the same about me. I got him almost anally raped by the TSA 2 weeks
ago. That happens.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, but with Austin, I like the idea that I know for a fact that after the election's over, he's not going to climb mountains for 4 years. He's going to help the party.
Right.
And I like what I really appreciate about Austin right now is that when he didn't get the nomination, he still turned around to help the party, and he's going to probably do a better job of it over the next 4 years than Johnson will.
Do you think that he'll run again in 4 years?
He keeps saying that he won't.
Okay. Yeah, but
he will.
Listen, yeah, candidates say that. They always go, because you're exhausted at the end of a campaign cycle. You're just totally done.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and you've kind of been out there with him. You got to be just drained.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely was. It was time to take a breather and turn around and start something new.
And then what happens is you get the bug, and then you're like, I'm going to run for president again. That was kind of fun. Because 3 years from now, you're looking, oh, man, Tony, you remember that time that we were in Indianapolis?
All those great times when we hated each other?
It's true, though, man. It is. It's why soldiers want to go back to war. It's the brotherhood. It's the camaraderie. Yeah, it's just fun. So how did you end up hooking up with Austin Peterson and
true story how we met?
Yeah.
Let's see. We had stalked each other online just to see like who's this guy.
Right.
And danced around and kind of looked. And I can't remember who reached out first.
Who dropped the first DM?
I can't remember. I really don't
know.
How
many statuses did you like of his in a row, or did he like of yours?
I have no idea, but there was a good, I bet it was about a year and a half of me just watching me like, is this one of my kind of guys, or is he not one of my kind of
guys? Austin's thirsty as fuck, is what you're saying.
It goes down in the DM. Snapchat me that. Never mind.
So finally we exchanged a little bit over social media, and it took about 6 months after that, and he's like, I'm going to be at Students for Liberty in D.C. Are you going to be there? I'm like, yeah, I'll be there. And he's like, cool, let's meet up at the hotel. We'll have a drink. And I said, all right, cool. And I got there, and I met him for the first time. That was Valentine's Day.
Was it everything you thought it would be?
It was everything I thought it would be. It was Valentine's Day, and we went from there to a gay burlesque club. Not even kidding.
You met. That's where they met McAfee.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then he decided to run for president, and that surprised me. But it's not like we just decided, hey, let's go to a gay burlesque club. The whole everybody was going to the club, and we're like,
Jeffrey,
all right,
Tucker was there, right?
No, he didn't go to the club, but he was there when I met Austin. Oh, okay. He was.
Listen, there were women involved. Otherwise, you're not going to a gay burlesque. If you're a straight dude, there are women going to the gay burlesque club, and you're going with them because you...
Oh, they love it.
Yeah. You want to be a part of that.
Oh, absolutely, right. Absolutely. There was one younger gentleman there that he was asking Austin and I.
Was he very thin, muscular?
No, this was while we were at the hotel, and he said he noticed we were going to go to the club, and he asked Austin and I, he said, you guys are good with ladies. He's a really nerdy kid, and we're like, yeah, sure, you know, by comparison, we're geniuses.
Start with eye contact.
So listen, Mr. Stiles, you've had sex with approximately 3.5 women. Can you tell me how that happened?
Yeah. I told him, I'm like, well, just, you know, when we get there, if I find some girls, I'll call you over and you can have them. He's like, all right.
Here's a bone, kid. Hey,
so
vote for Johnson.
So we're at this place, and I'm talking to these Hispanic ladies, and I buy them a drink, and we're talking, and they're not very clear about where they're from. And after a while, I realize these aren't ladies. These are definitely dudes.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go talk to Austin quick. Austin, I met these two girls. You got to go meet them. Bring him over.
She loves you.
Yeah. So he, you know, shakes her hands and talks a little bit, and he leans over and he goes, they're dudes. They're dudes. I look over, I'm like, yeah. And then I look at him.
Does that freak you out?
Yeah. And I won't say the poor kid's name, but I said, let's go get our friend. And he goes, yeah. So we bring him over. We're like, meet these girls. So we grab him. He comes over. He shakes their hand. He's all excited. We're like, you can have him, buddy. Didn't see him the rest of the convention.
He was it's because he was in a shower crying, Einhorn is a man.
Oh, God. This sounds straight out of the Hangover part in Thailand where it's like, I got the spermies inside me.
See, this is what... So we weren't really sure about you and Austin, to be quite honest.
Sure.
And I wasn't really crazy about you putting out Nick Sarwark's phone number. I didn't think that was very nice.
You say we a lot when it's something bad.
Is that the count?
Every time it's something negative, it's we.
Yeah. How dare you?
Nick and I had a very heavy conversation on the phone. It was he was yelling at me, and I was yelling at him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... And then over social media on DMs.
He is awfully boisterous for a county chairman.
So, yeah, I told him straight out, because what they had done is they had written something that was... he allowed something very negative to be written about my candidate that I knew for a fact he wouldn't ever allow to be written about Johnson. And I called him out on it, and he didn't like that.
Right.
And I told him, all right, well, then you're going to get phone calls. And he's like, how are you going to do that? And I'm like this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I actually called you guys out on it. And so I just wasn't sure, and I hadn't really paid terribly close attention. And I just looked at him like, Austin's 35. Come on. But then we interviewed him at the Indiana convention, and I was blown away by him. I watched him from then on, and I was totally blown away by his skill. I mean, what Austin did in this campaign was exceed expectations, because people had no expectations or low expectations, and then just exceeded those expectations. And when we talked to him, Greg and I just kept looking at each other through the interview, thinking to each other, oh my God, it's like one of us is running for president.
Well, ball, I kind of, you know, I've never ball, been a big Gary guy. And so I
troll,
like,
troll a little bit and ball bust.
Well, yeah. Like, you know, I've always said that, like, for Gary, for me, is he's an apologetic libertarian. Mm-hmm. And he makes me feel like there's something wrong with being libertarian because he tries to make it fit other ideologies. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Austin, he says, no, this is what I believe. And if you don't like it, tough shit.
Yep. Yep.
And so, you know, I think that, I, honestly, like Gary's lived longer. He's got the bigger resume because of that. But it doesn't mean that the style and brand that and the way Liberty is presented, I just feel like people are ready for strong leadership from a libertarian perspective and a strong message.
I think so also. That's exactly right.
So were you from the beginning of him running for president?
No. I had been in Cambodia for a little while, and I had come back, and I saw some stuff there that was troubling. And when I came back, I was going to go to Omaha, but there were things going on. My place was being rented out, and I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll call Austin. I think he's in Kansas City. And I called him, and I asked him if I could come stay with him. And he's like, yeah, sure, come on down and stay at his place. Saw people were working, and I was like, you know, you're serious. I thought you were kidding. You know, he's actually running for president. Hey,
you had the same reaction that literally all the rest of us in the Liberty Movement had was, right, okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I wrote down over the course of time that I was there, because I'm a venture capitalist. That's just the way my mind works, very businesslike. And I saw what he was doing right. And I saw a couple things needed to be changed. And I wrote it all out, and it took me hours one night. Stayed up all night, everybody's sleeping. And I put it into an envelope. I set it on the table, and I went to bed. About an hour later, he's knocking on the door. We talk about it. And he says, you know, come upstairs. We're sitting at the table. We're going to talk. Went up there, sat with the team at the table. I didn't apply for the job. I didn't agree to do the job. He, in the middle of breakfast, said, so Tony's going to run the campaign now.
Okay,
is exactly how it worked, and I said, "Well, I guess I'm running the campaign."
What about time frame?
February, late February
of this year.
Of this year.
Okay, all right.
Right about the time where it just really started ramping up.
Yeah. So how did the Stossel debate come about?
Oh gosh, it's all a blur.
Because I give Austin credit for that because of him working at Fox News. That was my assumption, but I don't know that for a fact.
There was a lot of emails exchanged between our camp and Fox News, and eventually they broke down because they wanted to have everybody on a couple times, and we just couldn't get everybody on board. And finally, it all came to play. It all came together. I'm not quite sure if it was us, but I don't think anybody else was communicating with them as heavily as we were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that to me really was the moment when was that, March?
It was April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day, that's right, yeah.
Yep.
And
we just can't get anything right, can we?
I know, like, we're going to film it on the 24th, but it's going to air on April 1st. I'm like, sure it is, John. And you have cancer too, I bet.
So to me, that was the first time, like, as a libertarian of 10 years, it was like, oh man, this really is kind of going to be our year. Like, we're going to get a debate and we're going to have choices. And, you know, when I went to the convention in 2012, you know, Gary was the clear choice. Lee Wright's great guy. Not the right choice for us in 2012. It was definitely Gary Johnson. You know, this year, you saw in that debate, you know, John McAfee, to me, while he had a lot of supporters, he has a biography problem. and he also has maybe
probably a Central American traveling problem. Too.
Right. He has a I don't know if temperament problem's the right word, but maybe cerebral cortex problem.
One of the greatest frontal guys lobe. Ever.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy.
He's really awesome.
But is the media going to take us seriously? And then Austin, it was like, all right, I guess they're just putting Austin in there because he worked at Fox News and they had to give him an attaboy. But then you watched the debate and you went, wow, okay, we have three serious choices. Yeah. And, you know, the conventional wisdom of that was that Gary was the guy, that Gary was going to walk away with it again.
Mm-hmm.
But he had kind of been stumbling through that early period because I don't think he was really prepared for you guys or McAfee at all.
That was one of the whole reasons for running this campaign was Austin, he says it all the time, if we're not going to win, we're going to make sure that Gary Johnson's a better candidate for us being there.
Yeah, and I think that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I really wanted Daryl Perry to be there for the Fox debate also.
Agreed, yeah, because honestly, Daryl is probably the one that I identify most closely in terms
of ideology.
In terms of ideology. So
yeah, if you could take Austin's voice and his presence and give it Gary's resume and give it the kind of allure of McAfee with the ideology of Daryl Perry, you have the perfect candidate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. I totally agree.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's why it has to be me in 4 years. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm all of those. I mean, look at me. Look at me. Kat, I exude the alphaness of John McAfee. Can't you tell? I know. It's so, yeah, you guys definitely. So, what was it like? What happened after the debate?
After the Stossel debate?
Yeah, for the campaign.
Then it really ramped up. That's when it took off. All that work that we had through March, leading up to it, while I was there, it all came together. People finally took it seriously. They looked at it and said, "This is an actual viable candidate." And social media just exploded with people.
Right.
And then it was it wasn't too much longer after that we had Rand Paul drop out, and that was just. A little bit more.
Really?
Because they weren't going to go Johnson. They weren't going to go. A lot of them weren't going to go Ted Cruz. Some of them did, but you knew Ted Cruz was going to drop out eventually, too, which was another amazing day for us.
Right.
But there's a, you know, in a general election, we probably would have done really well. It's collecting the delegates that are just so pro Johnson because they want to run for an office of their own in their own state, and they need the support, and they think they're going to get that from Gary, which wasn't the case 4 years ago, and over the past 4 years, so I don't know why they think it's the case now, but that's what they're pitching them, and it sounded good, and they you know, kudos to them. They ran a fantastic campaign. I don't know if they'll be, you know, millions in debt again after this one like they were in the last one, but if they're not, you know, good for them.
That almost sounds like a dig.
There's a little bit of shade.
That would be really unfortunate if such an event were to happen.
No, I get it, because having run campaigns and having gone through conventions, you know, there's always still some hurt feelings. You know, here in Indiana, we had a contested convention for governor. And again, there's still, you know, there's still a little bit of tenderness in some of those relationships. And, you know, I think everybody kind of has kissed and made up, but you know...
I know one that hasn't.
Yeah, well...
There's a scalp on your wall.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Jeff Cam, Melissa Donahue, we will probably never make up. That's okay, though. I'm fine with it.
What happened? Did you, like, you bang a sister, or what happened?
No, I would have liked to, because yeah. I had the hots for a sister in high school.
That would have been the ultimate alpha move.
So...
Never say never.
We'll get into that off air. This dude just—he didn't like that Greg made a meme of him. And
hilarious meme.
It
got used to it.
I know.
It was a large.
That list keeps getting longer.
But to be fair, Greg, when you take a man's work photo, his stock image from work, and then you put a large black phallus on his mouth, he might be upset about that.
I don't know why, because I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's offensive that he would think there's something wrong with that, and I don't support homophobia.
That's right.
If it was a small black one, would he be as offended?
Yeah. Who's to say? I don't cater to homophobia.
So there's tenderness, and you kind of eventually that stuff heals and it goes away. And I think that a lot of it does. The person that loses does carry a lot of the responsibility, and I think that Austin has handled himself very well and has been very gracious in the aftermath.
Absolutely. Greg, yeah, he did a great job of it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's me. I don't have a hurt feeling towards Gary. I'm happy that he's there. He's better than a lot of people who were running. We had some just crazy people running that shouldn't have even had anything to do with. I don't know why. I guess it's libertarianism. You allow everybody to run. You know, a guy has a boot on his head, let him run.
The Republicans have that too. They just don't ever get anywhere near a microphone because it's such a, you know, the media picks the front runners.
That's exactly
That's why
right.
they started the Tea Party. They right. put them in camp.
right.
yeah. That makes sense. But yeah, I love Gary, and I loved Gary in 2012. I still love him now. And as far as the campaign, it was a success. We won, really, when you think about it. I was depressed for about a day and a half until I realized that we took Austin Peterson and got him that close to being the nominee for president of the United States. That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So,
no David, my good friend Austin.
I know, but isn't that insane? Think about that.
It is, because having watched Austin for a long time... You know,
I know.
Welcome to We're Libertarians, the bashing Austin Peterson episode.
No, it's
mind-boggling.
He's my peer. Okay, so he's, you know, he's only 3 years older than I am. He's my peer, and so I look at him and I'm like, I'm a jackass. I have no business being president of the United States. We need grown-ups, and I can't imagine that Austin is a grown-up. Like he started Libertarian Republic, which is great, but like. It's listicles, you know, for libertarians.
What's he gonna do? Shit post Putin?
Right. And then all of a sudden you watch him and you go, holy shit, this dude's really smart. And he's you know, and I knew that he was a gifted communicator. But I didn't.
He's brilliant.
I didn't realize how smart he is.
Oh yeah.
And how any issue he can take on. And I think time and time again we've talked about how he would absolutely if the debate commission and the pollsters were going to take a libertarian candidate seriously, it was always going to be Gary.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to put a libertarian in the debate against Trump and Hillary, you want Austin in
there. Yeah, he would have killed him.
He would have destroyed him.
Yeah.
You know, and
Gary's just going to...
Gary's got that affect, that North Dakota affect.
Yeah. I can't even talk about this because they both know how I feel about his right angle flips during live debates when he hunches his shoulders.
All right.
It's like the most egregious, like, played-up Bush move I've ever seen. It's like,
I think, but you know what? I like the Samantha Bee interview with Johnson.
He's endearing. He's got an endearing quality.
He is, and he is... he is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. He is
a
very humble person.
Yep.
He is the kind of person that, you know, when we talk about the integrity that we want in a politician, Gary Johnson embodies that. You know, he really does. He is a genuine, authentic person. And I've, over my conversations with him over the years, he's just a great guy. And I think he would be the first to admit that, yeah, he does. You know, he's maybe not the most photogenic. And like that Samantha Bee interview, he played it up a little bit. He was kind of making fun of himself, which shows you the kind of guy that... Do you think Donald Trump is going to make fun of himself? No, he's an emotional midget.
Yeah. We don't know if he is.
he
could be right
he
now.
Could be. He could be playing all of us. But yes, I mean, kudos to you, because the Peterson campaign, I think, surprised a lot of people and earned a ton of respect for Austin. And... I think the majority of people, I don't know about the majority, but I think there are a lot of us out there who go, all right, maybe this wasn't the cycle, but I really would like him to run again and represent us, because he started off as, I'm not going to say a joke candidate, but somebody that, like, okay, I looked at it in the beginning, I was like, okay, you're just going to Facebook Live your way to the presidency?
Yeah.
But
almost did.
He almost did, and it really worked, and it's because of the type of person that he is, and I think that he would do a great job representing us in the future. So I know he says he's not going to run, but he'll run. He's going to run.
Maybe.
He had too much fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He did. We had a good time. There are little things that pop into my mind about the campaign. You know, the Sugar Daddy Peterson thing that happened. You guys remember that?
No.
Okay, never mind. I won't talk about it. No, somebody came out with an article. They found his dating profile on sugardaddy.com.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they put that up, and it was everywhere.
Pyramids of pussy, that sort of thing. Not always the best look for a candidate.
Yeah,
but...
not really the best. But what had happened
made him stand out in the party.
It definitely did.
Very well respected by the We Are Libertarians guys, because... Yeah. you know, we all aspire to pyramids of pussy. I'm working on more of a lean-to at the moment, yeah. but...
yeah. A good toothpick of pussy would be
right.
Yeah, no, but we were in passing, we were just talking one day, and he says, oh, by the way, I signed up for this dating site a long time ago. It's called SugarDaddy.com. I don't think it'll come up. And I was like, whoa. And then it was almost like clockwork the next day. I'm like, oh, there it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was one of the more fun things we had to deal with. And the best thing that people kept on asking, because they'd send me direct messages, because it's the Libertarian Party, they do that. And they'd say, what are you guys going to say about this? And I'm like, who hasn't tried to get laid on the internet?
Right.
You know, that's the correct response, isn't
right.
it?
Right.
Yeah.
And it died quick.
So, we here have a love-hate relationship with our people.
Sure.
I do, anyways. But I think I speak for everyone in We Are Libertarians when, listen, the majority of libertarians annoy us. And we do this not only because it's fun, but also to, you know, what was the line from The Newsroom? I'm on a mission to civilize.
A mission to civilize. Right. Don Quixote.
Right. Like, the last episode, we had to have a frank conversation about how not to stare at Chloe's feet anymore when you're at the national convention. Please don't walk up to the lovely Chloe and Agnos and breathe on her. basic life skills.
Want to
like
come
that.
Back to my room and read Rothbard?
Anarchy, utopia in the state. Let's get Nosebiak. What is it like out there when you're traveling and you are going to all these conventions and you're working for a campaign? I mean, what is the majority of the Libertarian Party in terms of the activist? Give me kind of a demographic makeup of those people.
They are philosophically sound people that want to vote for celebrity.
Hmm. Explain that.
I think most libertarians, I would say all of us, I guess, we have nearly 85-90% of our philosophy is exactly the same. We argue over that 10-15% all the time. It makes us look like idiots.
Sure.
And that's just the way the party is. But they don't want to elect anybody that sound like them. They want to elect somebody that's not. And I can't explain it. That's the
best looking glass effect.
Is
you know,
what it is?
Or I mean, that's what it feels like to me is that they see Gary Johnson, and even though they don't, you know, they want him, but he's imperfect, so they still vote for him, even though they in private bash him.
Sure.
You know, or that's what it feels. It's like they're so desperate to be liked and taken seriously, they'll do anything at all to get it, but then they're pissed off about it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Right. Yeah, I get it, because there is, after so many years in the wilderness, and even me after 10 years, I'm excited about the coverage that Gary Johnson gets.
Oh, yeah.
And if I'm...
I forget all about that shit I talked about over the yeah. last 6 months. You know what I mean? But
I didn't.
Not us, but I mean, like,
yeah,
you know, it's all of a sudden, yeah. I see these same people crushing him, promoting yeah. the hell. Oh, my God, there's going to be a CNN town hall. And before yeah. that, it was Gary Johnson's the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There is that thing where we do want to be liked. And we talk all the time on this podcast about the lack of confidence that our people have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I think the reason that Austin and John McAfee were attractive is that there is that confidence. There is that, you know, the thing in Austin that says, you know, this is what I believe.
It's one, yeah. It's
you know,
one of us.
I'm not.
That's what it felt like.
I'm not going to treat a progressive with respect because they don't deserve respect. That brutalist attitude of,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm right and you should just, you know, Carl the Cuck can go shut up.
yeah. yeah. Well, you know, it's like I think a lot of times the only difference in me between Austin and Gary is that Gary's somebody that his instinct when Bernie drops out was to go in court and make his message fit. Austin is a lighthouse. You know, he stands there with his principles and draws people in.
Yeah.
Gary goes out with his boat and tries to build a yeah. coalition.
The yeah. coalition of people that aren't going to vote.
I mean, historically, they're going to look at it. Like, they may love Gary on the social issues. Now, I know there's a ton of people that disagree with me in the party, but I don't see any Bernie supporter supporting Gary Johnson in the voting booth.
Yep.
But that's just me personally.
Yeah.
I don't
if
agree.
They make it to the voting booth.
I don't agree with you guys. I think that there will be maybe not a large amount, but there will certainly... I mean, when you look at how people come into the Libertarian Party, it truly is a third, a third, a third. It's a third from the left, like Brett Bittner, like...
Well, Brett's always been a Libertarian. He was never anything
oh,
before.
Oh, that's right.
He's
yeah, right.
He's pure and perfect.
Like Joe. you know, Joe was an Obama voter. Rupert was an Obama voter. And then they became libertarians because of those broken promises. You know, then you and I came in from the right. And then there are people like Brett who just were born libertarian. So I do think that there is going to be I do think that there is an opportunity for Gary to court those people. And I do think that there may be an opportunity for William Weld to court some of the Romney people. And I know people just lost their shit over Romney saying that he'd vote for Gary Johnson, which, like, to me, isn't that what you want? Isn't that what you want? You want somebody to press the libertarian button for the first time, and, like, it somehow is some sort of, it shows that they aren't pure enough. And my good friend Roger Paxton of the Lava Flow podcast is losing his mind over William Weld. And I know Austin wasn't a fan of William Weld, but, you know, he's the candidate now. And if you want to be absolutely pure, you really can't be in politics.
Yeah.
There's just no place for absolute purity in politics because it's the people business. It's pragmatism. It's, you know, making deals. And so to me, Gary and William Weld were the two that were going to kind of be this team that could draw people more to us, you know. So I disagree with you two. I think that there is a little bit more of a chance to get a Bernie supporter than if we had an Austin pissing them off.
Yeah,
you know. So it just doesn't, in my mind, the math didn't work on that. But
and ultimately, none of us know until we see, you know, sure, what the final vote totals right are. We're all guessing.
Totally different, but. You know, I think it was made clear by the debate commission and by the polling firms that if it wasn't Johnson Weld, they weren't going to take us seriously.
Yeah.
Which really kind of sucks. Like, and that's sort of what you're talking about, isn't sure it? It's like we're choosing our nominee based on what a polling firm wants.
Like me.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like me, please.
That's exactly right.
Tell me I'm pretty.
We always seem to nominate these people that aren't libertarians. It's over and over again. You look at Bob Barr. I mean, when was the last time that they went out and got a libertarian to be the libertarian nominee? It just doesn't happen.
Probably Harry Brown.
Yeah. It's been a while, though.
Yeah.
You know?
He's no longer alive.
No. Badnarik.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Badnarik. If you're not familiar with Badnarik, he's OG libertarian. So what were some of the... Give us some juicy gossip from behind the scenes of the Austin Peterson campaign. That people would be surprised to know.
No, there's really nothing they can talk about. I mean, there really isn't. There's stuff that happened that was, you know, when it happens, you're just like, well, geez, wow. You know, this is the kind of stuff that you hear about on campaigns, but you just don't think it's real. And that kind of stuff does happen. But it's nothing that I probably will ever talk about.
Sure.
You know, just like Ron Nielsen has his secrets.
He just winked at the camera. Yeah, I'm sure Ron has a lot.
Yeah, I have mine.
Chris Thrasher has his.
Yep. Yeah, one of the better stories I have was the first time that I met McAfee was in Atlanta, and we're outside and we're smoking a cigarette, and I asked him.
John smokes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No.
And I asked him. I said, "You want to go?" They had their. Well, I should preface this. They had their convention at Andretti's indoor kart racing.
Okay.
And I asked him, I said, "Do you want to go inside and race? We can set up a race between you and Judge Gray and Austin." And he's like, "That sounds like a good time. I'll do that." And then he takes a puff, and he looks over at me and he says, "I have totaled 12 ATVs.
That's a good impression, yeah, too.
And
I'm imagining him, like, flicking it, looking back up at you, stepping on the cigarette, and walking back inside.
I took a puff of mine, just trying to play it cool. In my head, I'm just like, wow.
He's nuts.
Yeah, and I look over, I go, "Gee, John, that's a whole lot of ATVs. And he takes a puff of his cigarette, and he looks back over at me and goes, "Well, not really, when you consider that's really only about one every 4 years."
How many hookers were killed? Yeah. That's what I
want. I love that story. That was my first impression of him.
That is great.
Was him saying that to me.
And I'm sure it was flat affect. Yeah. And then I'm imagining like a Bond villain cackle as he's walking away.
Yep.
So what was the convention like?
I did not go down to the national convention.
Really?
Yeah, I had some family issues I need to take care of.
Yeah. Okay. Is your mom all right? I heard.
Yeah, there's some stuff going
Sorry
on.
Sorry to hear about
that,
man.
It's all right. I don't talk about my family a whole lot, but it's, yeah, you know, I had obligations that were bigger than other things that I had to take care of.
So I want to ask about the gun. Can I ask about the gun?
Sure.
All right.
Austin Peterson's garbage pistol.
Yeah, because
oh boy,
this
picking at scabs
because this bothers me.
I don't know the whole story. All I know is what I was told, and I believe every person that told me. And it sounds like
Weigel in the Washington Post report. I mean, Gary Johnson flat out admitted. So basically, what happened is, I mean, you probably know the story better than I do. So can you explain it?
Well, first, throughout the campaign, Austin said to me, if he gets the nomination, I will give him this pistol. And it was something that Austin really felt sincere about. And he's a very sincere person, and he really meant it. He felt like if Gary gets the nomination, he's going to give him that pistol, and that will be his prize to him.
And it's an American Revolutionary replica.
Exactly. And it means something historically to do something like that with your weapon. And he did it, and then Gary chucked it.
So what Weigel reported in the Washington Post was that they were standing there, and Austin kind of, you know, and there's press around, and Austin presented the gun to him. But then Austin said something anti-Weld, and that pissed Gary off. And so Gary got pissed and threw it as he walked out in a show. He knew people were going to see it, and he did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Just to kind of say, well, if you're going to stand there and fuck me, I'm going to fuck you back.
Yeah.
But
I haven't talked to any of those people that have seen that part of it.
Okay.
But I know where it was found, I know the story, and I know how it was handed, and I know the aftermath. But as far as anybody seeing it go in the trash, I haven't heard anybody firsthand of that, but I haven't really pursued knowing that part either.
So, but we can say that that happened.
Yeah, it's pretty safe to say with all the accounts that are out there.
So, yeah, I was disappointed because to me that I think Gary is such an amazing guy and it just seems like such a dick move.
Yeah.
But you never, I heard it coming out of the convention and you just never know. Like you hear stories that come out of conventions and you never can believe all of them, you know. And I've seen firsthand at two conventions people saying that certain things happened, but they didn't actually happen. You know, it's just. Independent political report said it happened, so that everybody believes it, and that's just not the case. So,
are you trying to tell me that everything on Independent Political Report is not true?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
You just might as well have told me Santa Claus isn't true. I'm devastated.
Yeah. So talk about after. I mean, talk about after the convention. I mean, it's the worst. When I was executive, so my background, I was the executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana for 4 years here. And so I was a full-time paid employee of the party. The worst part of my job was calling the day after the election candidates who the day before they were sure they were winning because everybody had come up to them and said, I'm voting for you.
Sure.
You know, and then you
and nobody walks up and says, I'm not voting for you. Go,
right.
You know,
people walk up and they lie to your face. And these people, they're just heartbroken the day after. You know, they're like, Rupert. It when Rupert in 2012 and he ran for governor and he was like, oh, we're gonna do this, we're gonna win.
Oh, and gosh, I forgot that he was from here. Yeah, absolutely.
Then,
go ahead.
And then he got 4% that evening. We just went on the RV and he was like, I'm sad.
Maybe a little less tie dye would have gone a long ways.
No, we didn't have. We honestly didn't have enough tie. He actually doubled.
Didn't have enough tie dye.
He did. He...
That's what the problem was. Yeah. There was not enough tie dye.
That's exactly right. All right. Yeah, we just had him. We do a live show once a month. We go to a comedy club and we have a live podcast. And he was our guest. And we interviewed him, and a lot of it was we just didn't let Rupert be Rupert, but he still doubled the amount of people that we had. You know, sure. We still had from 2 to 4%, but yeah, that campaign that day after, that's just the biggest letdown. I mean, what was it like inside the Peterson campaign?
I wasn't around for it. I had my stuff going on, but I know I did talk to people, and in the limited time that I had, you know, it was a little depressing, but like I said, it took me a couple days. It took me a day and a half, 2 days for me to realize, you know, the whole thing was a success when you look at it.
Sure.
We did something that could not have been done any other year or any other way. everything just fell together perfectly.
And set a tremendous platform for the future.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
a huge example, even for Republicans and Democrats to take, the way that we use social media.
Sure.
We did it better than any of them did.
Yeah. So now that the campaign is over, what are you doing next?
I'm taking some time, and now I am. I just negotiated a new radio program, which is good. It's a lot different. I'm not talking politics anymore. I'm doing human interest stuff because I'm tired of people telling me how much I suck and how much they want to kill me and sending me dead rats in the mail and things like that. It gets old.
Yeah, my mom called me like 3 weeks ago, and she's like, "And he's threatening to kill me." I'm like, "Mom, your first death threat.
Yeah.
That first death threat's always scary, but nobody is ever actually going to kill you. Yeah. It's okay. I get one a week."
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And they roll in, and I'm just, I get kind of tired of it. I can do very libertarian things without talking politics and pissing people off.
Sure.
I remember that drunken redneck that called you. And said,
yeah.
Tony Styles.
Yeah.
I'm coming for you.
Yeah. 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 He called me. What did he say? There's a couple different ones he left. He would leave a message every week.
I loved him.
Yeah.
I laughed at every one of them.
Oh, gosh. He was hilarious. What did he say? He said, Tony Styles, we need to carry you out to Afghanistan. Just throw your ass out the back of the plane. Where you land is where you land. You deal with them motherfuckers. You hear me?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Pinochet.
Yeah. It's just helicopter and Tony Styles.
Free helicopter ride to Tony Styles.
Right.
Yeah. So he had some good ones.
It's on SoundCloud.
Yeah, is it? Yeah,
somewhere
on there. I know that I have a Facebook of the whole thing. I'll dig it up if we have time. But yeah, he would call a lot. But a lot of people did, and most of them were Southerners that they love their flags and their Jesus and
careful.
Yeah, I know.
The table's covered in flags.
Triggering I know me. It is.
This is actually the reason we did this is to troll people. So.
Yeah, you should. That's what it did to me. I walked in. I questioned my. My freedom and why I was here.
So we
made me rethink 9/11 all over again.
We're here to trigger people.
Yeah. We do a podcast called Creating Maya. One of our co-hosts transitioned from male to female, and so we over the last 4 years have documented her transition. And so last week she came to do an episode, and so I had found this at Meyer, and I had laid it down on the table, and she walked in and just freaked out and was so pissed off. Yeah. And it got exactly what I wanted.
She usually
like,
burns a flag every year on Facebook.
Yeah, she burns a flag every 4th of July. So I just decided to leave it, so just to trigger people. You know, we're not anti-American, and we also want to keep the flag in case Greg ever gets questioned by the TSA for me. So he flew to Orlando a couple weeks ago, and I thought it'd be hilarious.
Turns out it wasn't.
Turns out it was not funny to copy and paste 350 NSA keywords into his Facebook status.
On my check-in.
Yeah.
On his check-in at the airport.
Turns out that's not a good idea, and then when someone else thinks it'll be funny to tweet Southwest that there's known terrorist Greg Lenz getting ready to board.
And, you know, Joe Ruiz photoshops a picture of him next to Bin Laden.
Yeah.
No, it's bad. Nice.
Yeah, they delayed the flight.
It's almost as funny as your dream where I died, and it was by brutal anal rape.
Yeah.
Almost as funny.
You shouldn't go to IU. So rest in peace. So, all right. So you're doing another radio show. You mentioned earlier that you're getting ready to go out of country.
I am. I'm heading off to Africa for the next couple months. I'm heading to South Africa and Sierra Leone, making maybe a couple stops here and there, depending on what countries they'll let me into.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing anti-human trafficking work. I did that work when I first stopped going to college. When I got done with college, I went to Romania and Bulgaria and Ukraine and places like that and did work there and got back into it just recently and came back from Cambodia, did the Peterson campaign, and now I'm back after it. We're doing Africa right now, and then later on we're hitting parts of Europe again, heading back to Southeast Asia. But in Africa, South Africa, and Sierra Leone, those two places is where we're focusing our efforts. The organization is called Eros Foundation, and we started that up. We got all the paperwork, all the government crap they make you do. So we can now accept.
You're licensed to stop sex trafficking.
We're licensed to stop sex trafficking now.
How dare you stop?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? It's insane. But we can offer theft deductible receipts now.
I'm sorry, but I just can't support it when you can tax exempt sex trafficking. I'm so against that.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing. A lot of the stuff that we're doing is a very venture capital approach to ending it. What we're doing is we're creating a network of different organizations that are out there smaller ones that are running purely on passion and rainbows and sunshine. They think they can run a charity, but you can't run it on that. It's an actual business. You need to know how to run a business.
Right.
Yeah. So what I'm doing is I'm going to these places and I'm teaching them this is how you're supposed to run things so you can sustain it, so you can fight it, so you don't just die off. Mm-hmm. And
that's sort of like the Jeff Bezos model. Like he'll only invest in sustainable organizations.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's what I'm doing is I'm creating sustainable organizations out there that will eventually turn into a giant worldwide network of organizations that can help each other fight against sex trafficking.
Do you partner with like Kiva or any micro entrepreneurship organizations?
No, not really.
No.
No, I probably could, but that's right
now. Oh, I mean, getting into the, I mean, it's, you know, they have bureaucracy on top of the government bureaucracy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm more into just doing it straight anarchy.
Bottom up.
Yeah, exactly.
So go ahead.
I'm sorry. If you find Coney, are you personally going to stab him and like put it on Facebook Live?
Not, yes. Yeah, not.
What will you
I caught Coney.
what will you do with Coney?
Yeah.
I'm here for back and watch, you know.
I have no idea.
Aaron, in case you were wondering, Aaron's a jackass.
Yeah.
But that is a valid question. What would you do with Coney?
I don't know. I'm a much less dangerous Liam Neeson in the human trafficking world.
So when you go there, what would
I have no particular set of skills.
I'm really good at talking. So when you go there, what exactly will you be doing on a daily basis? Like, would you be, because in my mind, I think you're like rushing into brothels saving kids.
There's,
but is there more like that goes training?
On. There is some of that goes on. There's parts of that are very real. Like in Cambodia, what I did there was there's fake orphanages in places like that. And what they do is they will buy out a loan on a house or a car or some sort of property from the bank. And these human traffickers will show up at these people's houses, cartels or whatever they may be, and say, we now own your property. We want you to pay now. And mm-hmm. they say, well, we can't pay. And they say, well, you have kids. Can we take those?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they take these kids and they take them into a fake orphanage, which has a front as an orphanage. The government knows all about them.
And receives a monthly stipend.
Yeah, exactly.
In order to ignore it.
Uh-huh. And they sell the kids to pedophiles, either, you know, for an hour or just to take with them. A lot of them kill them off afterwards after using them.
Oh, wow.
Some get taken back to the States and just used forever. Some get taken to other countries. A lot of these people inside the place, my job in this particular case was to play the pervert, mm-hmm. go into the fake orphanage, look at it, identify the kids, buy a few, bring them back to camp. And the most common thing said when you enter one of these places is, where's your youngest?
Oh, wow.
And so that's the words that came out of my mouth were exactly that, and they took me and showed me, and I identified some of the kids and decided that we were going to buy, that I was going to buy 10 of them, mm-hmm. and bought 10 of them and brought them back to the camp. And we informed them there, the guys are a little more badass than I am, the ones that do the guns blazing type thing. They informed them, we want you to come back with us to the orphanage in the middle of the night. We want to get some of your friends. Only about two of them were willing to do that. A couple of them thought we were full of crap. You know, nobody makes it back. That's just their mentality.
Yeah, why would you trust anyone who is an adult?
Exactly. And then a couple of them were like, we'll never go back to that place. You couldn't get us to go back. We don't care about our friends. We're not going back to that place.
Sure.
But there were two of them that went back in. They ended up getting 50 more outs. We ended up leaving in the middle of the night with 60 kids.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's a private security contracting firm that helps you with that, or is it people that are in the organization?
It's not inside my organization. They don't have their own organization. They work covertly, and you can call them when you need them, and those that are in human trafficking circles know who they are.
Yeah. That's awesome.
None of their names. I couldn't tell you a single one of their
names. Oh, of course not. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. You know, you couldn't do that, but I was just wondering if it was something, clearly they'd have to be vetted and that type of thing.
They know what they're doing. They have precision.
Yeah.
So then
a no-knock raid, if you will.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
So is that essentially what you're going back to do again?
There will probably be some of that. And, you know, I say Cambodia in that case. I was in Cambodia, but the country that we were in when that happened isn't Cambodia. I say it when I do shows and things like that because of people were listening, they'd say, oh, he was there when, mm-hmm. and okay,
right,
that's the guy,
right,
and then things go backwards for me. But we snuck across a border of Cambodia to another country, and that's where it actually happened. But there's we will be doing some stuff like that. There are instances where that kind of stuff does happen. We identify something is not quite right, we look into it, and then you call in the guard.
Sure. So if people want to help, how can they help?
We are doing a thunderclap starting on Monday. mm-hmm. and that will have a crowd fund behind it. And like
explain a thunderclap.
Thunderclap is it's like a social media movement.
Like a money bomb type thing?
Kind of like that. You can go to thunderclap.com, I think it is, and see what it's all about. What they do is they link all social media and they push out whatever you're doing, whatever cause that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a pretty good job of it. Our cause, of course, is the human trafficking, and we want to raise somewhere between 15 and 25,000 to take over to Africa and do what we need to do there. Most of it will go directly to the organizations we're working with. And it's, how do I want to say it? It's the big launch. That's what it comes down to.
Sure.
And all of it, like I said, is theft deductible. So mm-hmm. if you want less theft,
meaning tax deductible for the slower members of our audience.
Exactly. If
Aaron you want to come in, puzzled,
yeah. So. If you want to
Martinsville,
taxation is theft? Question mark.
Right. Yeah. So if you want to come in and do that on Monday, we'll have it all set up and ready to go. We launch then, and people can go in and they can see firsthand. What I've been building for the past month.
I will get with you and make sure that we are libertarians participates and that we use our stuff to put that out there and help out. So
that'd be great.
Make sure I do that and you help me. Remind me. So
woman,
listen, I'm forgetful. Yeah. Well, Kat is very helpful. Kat is sitting in here. Kat, say hi.
Hello.
So Kat is just sitting in here. She's hanging out. She's a fangirl. She's been to We Are Libertarians Live. She ran.
I heart you.
I know. Thank you. And you ran Mark Rutherford's campaign for president.
National chair. I just want to say effective and inclusive. Thank you.
Effective and inclusive. Sorry for your loss, but you did a great job. Kat was an all-star. She was the. Mark is very difficult to keep track of.
Yeah, you got the runner-up squad in here.
Yeah, exactly. This is great. It's nice to have the JV team on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In real life trolling.
we will certainly do what we can to help. Let's move from one tragic situation to another. Let's talk a little bit about Orlando and what happened. Greg is the informed one of the two of us. Greg reads the news and pays attention.
He knows I offer things. Opinions on it.
Right. Yeah. I'm the one who builds all the structure, and then he's the one who does something with it.
No, I mean, I'm sure everyone here is familiar with the situation.
Yeah, somebody obviously. Raped a dinosaur or something like that, right?
Raped a dinosaur?
Yeah, that's what I don't know. I don't read the news.
Oh, no, okay. I was wondering if I missed that, and I was pretty upset. I was like, because now we're going to cover that.
Jurassic Park 69.
Yeah. Listen,
if there's a dinosaur raping, I'm probably involved in it.
Yeah. No, there was a 29-year-old security guard, Omar Mateen, who went to a nightclub in Orlando and decided to have a hostage situation and confirmed killed 49 people. And realistically, what's going on, he supposedly killed himself, he declared his allegiance to ISIS. And then also announced that the Tsarnaev brothers were like his brothers in faith. And so it's caused quite the stir because there have been about, no less than 10 to 20 solid media outlets who have done eyewitness reporting and people saying they're an up to 5 co-conspirators. And the FBI and the CIA and anyone involved is only saying that it was this one man. And then he used an AR-15. And what's compounded the situation is rather than taking a minute to pray for families or to say, you know, pray for this community or help this community when you can. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton immediately seized it as an opportunity to politicize the thing. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton and President Obama seized it as an opportunity to pursue gun control. Donald Trump seized it as a highlight and a perch to stop the immigration of Muslims and perhaps even send them to Japanese-style internment camps.
Yeah. Nice.
To begin doing, I think he said, very respectful raids of mosques, which I'm not entirely sure how you do that.
We're going to come in and we're going to destroy everything in your religion.
The imams love me. Everybody knows.
I'm going to take away your freedom and rights, but you're going to love it. It's going to be a good. It's going to be a good rights raping.
Right. Yeah. It's an interesting story on multiple levels because also this week Pew put out and Gallup put out a research poll that showed or got picked up in the Washington Post that what has led to the rise of Donald Trump. Or what has not necessarily read, but coincided with it, is an absolute collapse in the trust of institutions. Mm-hmm. And I put it in our newsroom, and I was, you know, initially you'd look at that and you'd say, that sounds really good for libertarianism.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we hate more than the institutions of government and how it's administrated.
But in the long run, if people get desperate, they're going to go towards a strong leader. You know, they're going to say, well, we all go to anyone who will give us a promise, even if it's a false promise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is what part of the appeal is to Donald Trump yep. and why it's a bad thing for libertarianism.
Sure.
And so in this case, we're not even trusting the media anymore. I mean, you have legitimate media outlets who look at this and they report the story in a way that is knowingly false because they're probably getting information from the CIA and the mm-hmm. FBI about, hey, we don't want to let people know we're under their trail that are co-conspirators or people who carried out the attacks as well. But it looks so fishy to the American media consumer that you say, this guy killed 53 people with an AR-15 going into a club that he's been to before. People are familiar with him on from a dating apps, even though he was rumored not to have had – no one had ever hooked up with the guy.
Was it sugardaddy.com?
No.
Austin wasn't there. I can confirm that. No, but you know, it goes as far back as a former high school classmate saying he knew – he had been approached by Omar Mateen about you know, hooking up. And the guy then – clearly, he's married. His dad is actually running for president of Afghanistan and has a relationship with the State Department, has a YouTube radio show out of California. And there are just so many things that look suspicious. And the real thing is it was immediately branded as a terrorist act.
Yeah, immediately.
Instead of a hate crime,
mm-hmm.
which you would think probably would make more sense. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying it isn't both,
yeah.
but I'm saying there was the immediate instinct by the press to politicize it as a terrorist situation rather than a hate crime against homosexuals.
Wasn't the Bilderberg Group meeting happening during the same time?
There was. Well, so the Bilderberg Group met
in Orlando.
Yeah, the NDAA extension and the funding bill for uh-huh. the continuation.
Uh-huh.
The women now have to be signed up for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
That got passed while all this no one was watching. Uh-huh. Supreme Court decision for net or appeals court decision for net neutrality. I mean, just 6, 7, 8 major things that all got missed
uh-huh.
while this is going on. And I am one of those people who hates the conspiratorial tone because it undermines your credibility in anything you do from that point mm-hmm. forward.
Alex Jones intensifies.
Right, it does. And that's the truth. But in this case, I mean, you have like local Orlando press with an entirely different narrative with eyewitness testimony than the national press. And
really?
There is no one picking up the local stories. It's a media blackout.
I haven't heard anything about this.
Like Zero Hedge has local, or they have actually an article where it's the media coverage at national level. And then right below it are 4 different local affiliate outlets talk with key eyewitness testimony saying there were multiple shooters. Now, you don't know if the FBI or the CIA are putting like a gag order on it so that they can pursue people and don't want them to get spooked. But this only is going to feed in to this total lack of trust within institutions in American society. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. In the short run, like in this election year,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a great thing because I think people don't trust anyone except the outsider, and Gary Johnson's the clear outsider. However, in the long run, let's say Gary doesn't win and people continue to not have trust in institutions to carry out their daily day-to-day life and to even get the information they need to make voting decisions, I feel like it's just going to breed a culture of mistrust and desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And right. that is the worst possible thing for us, because how do we say we've got an answer when we're telling them to get rid of the answers?
Right.
You know, and then the ISIS thing is probably overplayed, but the thing, there are some elements to that, because ISIS is known for, they've been attacking homosexuals throughout all of Europe. In Paris, mm-hmm. they attacked the concert with a homosexual yep. performance. They have repeatedly attacked homosexuals in Syria, throwing them off roofs,
mm-hmm.
making them walk to their death inside cages into water, lighting them on fire publicly, 15-year-olds being tossed off of ruins in Palmyra. I mean, one after another, it's the systemic elimination of homosexuals. Well, the imam at the mosque this guy went to, they live-streamed their monthly or weekly addresses, and he preaches about hating homosexuality. Well, I think that the case is here. He had homosexual urges, was desperate in his life, had no sense of purpose. He was married, wasn't really going anywhere, and was looking for a sense of purpose. And so he became more involved in his church, in his mosque. And by doing it, there was like a self-hatred over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reached a point where religion and Islam was giving him purpose. And the only way he felt he could atone for his urges and his sins was to do this.
Martyrdom. During Ramadan.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, then you have it. And then in France, there's a stabbing of homosexual couples this week. I mean, I don't know what to believe, obviously, but I don't. I think the media coverage has. I'm too damning of the wanting to make it look like a terrorist plot so they can increase NDAA funding. But I do think there's an Islamic element to, or no, an ISIS element to it, or a radical jihad element to
sure.
it.
Sure.
And I think that one thing I've not necessarily cared for from the left is they want to make it only as a hate crime.
Right.
The right wants to make it all about a false flag attempt to take away guns.
Yeah.
And then libertarians are the only ones that have provided any sort of reasonable coverage at all. But there has been an instinct to, you know, libertarians are against the whole ISIS thing. Like they don't, they believe that our intervention has caused ISIS.
Sure.
No doubt about it. However, it's still an issue and it will continue to be an issue as long as we keep bombing and intervening. And so the backlash for libertarians, I wish we'd just acknowledge that we've created the threat, obviously, and we can't just extend an open hand because right now they're still pissed.
Mm-hmm.
They're still pissed of sure. years of intervention. And so these things are going to start to happen. And I do think we have to fill that gap of, we can't just say we got to stop intervening and then it'll all go away.
Sure.
That won't happen. But that's what we need to do in the long run. I'm just not sure what the answer is in the short run, but we need to acknowledge it's a real threat as well as it was a hate crime.
Right.
That's the dominant narrative we should be paying attention to.
Tony, want to weigh in?
Nope.
Okay. to me, it is disheartening because I miss the people that were the post 9/11 people. You know, when something happens like this,
united,
there's a united mourning that takes place, and that didn't happen. And it immediately, what happens now in these situations is everybody runs to their tribe, and they want to make it about guns.
I mean, it was instantaneous.
It was instantaneous. There was no mourning period. There was
Gary Johnson was the only person that put out anything resembling a decent
empathy.
An adult response,
right? And it's never about. The truth is that I think you're right. I mean, this person is a mentally ill person.
That's what it is.
The people that commit these acts, it doesn't matter if it has nothing to do with the gun. It has nothing to do with that they were gay. It has nothing to do with their religion. It has everything to do with the fact that this person is mentally ill. And we in our society are so not to get to Oprah, because I'm trying to keep the Oprah portion of myself off of this podcast as much as I can, but
this is the no feel zone.
Yeah, so we American men especially, I was ranting to my therapist today about this. American men are so closed off from their emotions, and you have to be alpha, and you can't have, you know, the second you can't have insecurities, you've got to be tough, you can't share with your partner certain things. And then if you grow up in a family system like this guy grew up in, where the dad is clearly a loon, he's running for the president of Afghanistan.
He's incorporated in the state of Florida, the Temporary Government of Afghanistan, LLC.
Yeah. And so
that's one way to do it.
He's licensed a temporary government in Afghanistan.
Bob and Tom has a fake candidate. It's a satirical candidate called Doug LaDouche. Look him up. This guy looks like the Doug LaDouche of Afghanistan. He just seems like he's crazy. And so here's a guy who is growing up, and I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm trying to say that if we just demonize and villainize these mass shooters, and instead of delving into what makes them mass shooters and then having a discussion on a cultural level about why people are mass shooters, and it all has to do with mental health, then we're never going to get anywhere.
We keep diagnosing symptoms and not causes.
And then the step beyond that is the fact that we as a society, as a world, have lost sight of what it means to be human. And that people who disagree with us are human. That people, you know, if you're wanting to get rid of guns, you know, I had a friend who said, "I'm against guns. Go ahead and unfriend me." And it
done.
But no, I mean, but my point is that she did it because she's putting up a status, knowing I'm going to be attacked for having this opinion. And people aren't going to take the time to converse with me, to have a conversation with me about why I feel this way. They're just going to gang up on me and attack me. And social media, as much as it has benefited all of us, it benefits your work in human trafficking, Tony, it also, I think, has dehumanized us to the point from 9/12 to now, where now, if you're not wanting to get rid of AR-15s, then unfriend me because you're a bad person. If you're not wanting to get rid of all the Muslims in the country, then you're a bad person, unfriend me. If, you know, if you're going to have the opinion that this shooter was mentally ill and needed intervention and didn't have the structure around him to properly intervene, the wife clearly didn't have the capability to see that she was married to an absolute insane person. But if we, on a community level, on a cultural level, had more discussions about mental health, maybe she would have seen, oh, wow, this guy has this deep-set rage that is going to produce this. I better call somebody and do something. You know, and we just aren't getting to what the problem is. We're just getting angrier and angrier and more defensive and hunching up and getting into this little ball and
more fearful of the other side.
Fearful, yeah. But the problem is that there isn't another side. The world is holistic. It all flows together. You know, it all works together. And I think as you become more and more quote unquote libertarian, and you learn more and more philosophy, you see how these things flow together, how economics and it's tied to mental health and psychology, which is tied to economics, which is tied to everything. I mean, you see how the world starts to flow together, and the less siloing that we can do, the better. You know, I was told by a family member, it's like, you need to like cut it out with all this emotions talk on your podcasts. You need to like grow up and get over it and just be more like your grandfather who never talked about anything. He was a Marine in World War II. It's like, yeah, but my grandpa was miserable because he lived with PTSD, because he never felt comfortable talking about it, because that generation couldn't talk about it. And that's unhealthy. And cultures that encourage, I think you're right. Here's a guy who hates himself because he's gay. And so he acts out in the most violent way possible. Well, what are the conditions that go into that? So then we can prevent that from, we can prevent another 50 people dying.
And I mean, a lot of it was his lot in life, you know, or I mean, not lot in life, but it was that he was not, he was unhappy in his job.
Sure.
He didn't see it with long-term progression in a career. And so he was looking for purpose and toiling away and had these urges and then found it through faith.
Well, and it's
also, his faith teaches him that that's an abomination and guarantees, you know, he's haram and going to hell or going to Islamic hell. I don't know what that's. I wish I knew the terminology right now. But
Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also an element of suicide by cop. You don't feel like living, so I'm going to go do this and then I'll end up dead.
Well, I mean, his economic incentive from his religion is martyrdom. You know,
right.
It is. He is, you know, he's supporting the cause. He's fighting the good fight. He's lived without purpose and finally found it, even though he still hates himself. And by hating himself, he's able to redeem himself by committing this act. And all the incentives are in his favor.
Sure.
It's really sad. And it's only more because he had no affiliation with ISIS. He he self-identified as ISIS.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and that's sad because
he was transitioning to ISIS.
Yeah, he transitioned to ISIS. Very brave.
Yeah, very brave.
But you know, that's what we're gonna see more and more of. ISIS is an organization. We've made incredible inroads by attacking their supply lines through southern Turkey. We've made incredible inroads on their drug trade, on their sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. We've really put the squeeze on them, and then compounded with the fact that we are willing to hit them in more urban areas. You know, even as recently as this week, we considered hitting Raqqa, which is an urban area. And so as long as we do that, that makes them a more desperate organization, which means, like in France and then with this, they're going to claim anyone that's willing to claim them. Because sure. By doing it, it allows the politicians to demonize them, which helps their cause and raises their profile, is that they have influence all throughout the world in a global network. And at the same time, it makes us more susceptible to lone wolf attacks.
And this is why Trump is so dangerous, is because he encourages the closing off of that community. And so as a community becomes more isolated and they feel more persecuted and they feel less connected to, because it's like, you look at the Creating Maya podcast. Do you know how many people message Maya and I and say, I don't know a trans person. I've never thought about a trans person. I didn't like trans people because I didn't understand trans people. But now, because I grew up in a Christian household, But having listened and eavesdropped in on your conversations about what it means to be trans, I may not fully get it. I may not understand it. But I don't think that Maya's a bad person. I have more compassion and empathy for Maya and well, what trans people go through.
It's easier to drone strike an abstraction. It's
right.
easier to hate an abstraction.
Yeah.
Once you meet them, you're no longer afraid of them, and it makes a little bit more sense, and you know, the humanity element kicks in.
Yeah. And so that's why the ideas of closing America off to Islam and persecuting its citizens and increasing security, that's why profiling, it just makes these things worse. It just isolates people further. It really comes down to we need to foster a culture of dialogue. And maybe I'm being granola crunchy hippie, but I know how human beings work, and whenever you wall somebody off and say you're less than, that produces results where people feel they have no other option but to bomb you, shoot you, you know. And so, you know, yes, he's a monster, but he also needs to be understood.
Yeah, because we'll misdiagnose the
right.
prevention.
Right.
And that's the thing, though, is you have to understand he got his purpose, or I think he got his life's purpose from religion.
Mm-hmm.
He picked a religion where they find homosexuality to be an abomination. I don't know if there's a cultural answer to that. There are certain things. It's like we talked about before. There are certain times where there is no compromise that's to be reached.
Sure.
No matter how much cultural acceptance there is of homosexuality, of transgender, of whatever, where a person finds their identity and their life's purpose, it may be an organization of hate, or not of hate, but of standards culturally that are not acceptable, and when they're mentally ill, that compounds the fact into an event like Orlando.
Right. Anybody? All right. Well, this has been a fun episode. So here at the end of the podcast, we open up the floor so you can self-promote. I don't know if you know much about self-promotion, Tony.
Yeah, all right. Not a whole lot.
If you need some help, I can teach you. I can walk you through it and hold your hand.
Absolutely.
You can self-promote if there's something that you didn't get to mention that you want to mention again. If there's a completely random topic.
No, there is something that I want to say.
Go for it.
I want to take the time here, and I'll give you guys an exclusive on this whole thing. I love Gary Johnson, and I will definitely endorse him.
Oh, great.
Nice.
And you will not hear me say another bad thing about him until he screws up bad enough that I have to.
You're just praying he doesn't incur any more debt.
Yeah.
Like last time.
So that's my endorsement for him. I had a talk with some people on their administration today, and I'm happy. We're all things considered, he's a great guy, and he's going to be a great president.
All right, great.
Yep. TonyStyles.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all those places. You can find me because I can definitely find you.
Aaron Ewert.
First time I was here was probably about this time last year, maybe a little bit before this last year.
Yeah.
And I was going to Haiti with a group called Dots in Blue Water, and mm-hmm. They're back in Haiti right now with my father-in-law doing great work, and I would just encourage everyone to look them up, donate to them. Buy some water filters and give some people some clean water in Haiti. It doesn't cost much.
Say that organization again?
Dots in Blue Water. Look them up on Facebook.
Dots in Blue Water.
I'll share something tonight.
Kat, would awesome. You like to say anything?
Thank you for letting me observe you guys.
You're welcome. Greg?
Let's see. I will just say the correct terminology for Islamic hell from the girlfriend is Janam.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, just about Maples.
Yes. Just a little, yeah.
She knows
great
that.
Shuffleboard league. Great shuffleboard league.
She knows that because she's in it.
And then the other thing. Oh, Thomas Massie's leading a bipartisan effort to, let's say, I believe it's repeal the NDAA. I didn't read the full story. I just saw the headline, but I thought that was pretty awesome. He's finally able to get some support in the House, and then Rand Paul and Ron Wyden in the Senate. Have formed a little coalition, bipartisan coalition, to try and peel the thing back, which I think is a positive sign and only further evidence that libertarianism is growing.
All right, very good. You know, I want to say thank you to everybody that listens. I want to thank the people that donate on Patreon. I want to thank the people that, you know, donate in cash or come to our events. You guys have, or through PayPal. Listen, if you get value out of what we do at Weird Libertarians, $5 a month, that's $1 an episode. $5 a month is not that much. You know, we are at least half as valuable to your life as Netflix. I believe that. So please.
Is there a Dear Leader and Chill option for like $25 a month?
Send me a photo and there might be. So, and what we're doing is we are working on advertising. I talked to a few people who are friends of the show and they said, listen, you guys are great. You have a great retention. You have a great show. It's fun. I love listening to it. Enough people just don't know about you. So, want to do some advertising. We're working on upgrading the equipment. We're doing, you know, so you guys are helping making this happen. We're right on the brink of really launching. And if you have been influenced by We Are Libertarians and you are more active as a libertarian, if you are a libertarian because of what we do, then consider giving a buck an episode through Patreon or PayPal or a one-time donation, or heck, just go rate and review on iTunes and share it on Facebook. That is good enough, too. So we appreciate all your support. You guys are really awesome, and we have so much more to come in terms of growing this thing. So thank you to Tony Styles for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
Yes.
So we really, did appreciate you stopping by. It was great to finally meet you and talk with you in person.
Absolutely.
And I'm now a big fan.
Oh, thanks.
So
I come off kind of douchey online, so it's nice to meet you in person.
Well, you're talking to the masters. So. All right.
We are the douche lords you've been waiting for.
So please go check out Tony. Thanks for everybody for listening. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.